30 days of Purim, so it's time appropriate. Purim. So, before we start talking about Purim, Bezras Hashem, that will be our subject for the next couple of weeks until Purim. I want to give a general preface to the Yom Tovim in general. And that is that, Reb Shimshon Pinkus is one of the big revolutionists in really bringing the Yom Tovim, connecting the Jewish people to their Yom Tovim. And he said that as a kid, he found it funny. He would go to hear speeches about Yom Tovim. He went to a drasha about, let's say, Pesach, and you hear the speaker saying how Pesach is the root of all of our emunah. All of Judaism depends on Pesach, and it's the root of everything. Okay, a few months later, you go to a speech about Sukkot, and you hear how Sukkot is the most fundamental Yom Tovim. So what Pinkus said as a kid, it made me laugh. Then he said, I became a public speaker and I found myself doing the same thing. I spoke about Hanukkah, that became the root of it all. Talking about Purim, that became the root of it all. But then he said, and I realized that it's all really true. It's not such a joke. Why? Let's say you go to a medical convention. You have a representative of each of the different fields talking about his field. So the cardiologist gets up and talks about how the heart, how vital the heart is, how all of life depends on the heart, okay? Then the neurologist gets up, the brain is the most vital organ, everything depends on the brain. And then the pulmonologist gets up and says the same things about the lungs. They're all right, right? None of them are wrong. Because the truth is, each one has a different function, but each one is absolutely vital, right? So we have to understand that the Yom Tovim are not a haphazard collection of commemorations of things that happened in the past. Something happened at this time, alright, plunk down a Yom Tov, and we have a Yom Tovim reflecting the amount of things that happened to happen. It's not like that. It's a system. It's a system of very vital messages that come together. Each one contributes its element to the consciousness of the Jew, to the healthy spiritual constitution of the Jew. But really, each of them is not just the point that you're celebrating at its time, but a point that's meant to make an impact on you that you then carry with you for the rest of the year. And each one has its own department. This is true for all the Mayadim. Even the Mayad of Tisha B'Av has the message that it's meant to impress upon us for the whole year. So in this light, we have to approach each of the different Yom Tovim and try to see what is the very unique element that this Yom Tov is impressing upon us that we're meant to carry with us all throughout the year as Jews. So here, we can immediately note something outstanding about, we'll begin with Chanukah and Purim, then we'll boil it down to Purim. Chanukah and Purim superficially are Yom Tovim Rabbanon, right? They don't have their source in the Torah. Yet, at the same time, you see that in Halacha, there's a very special weight put on Chanukah and Purim, the concept of Pirsumei Nisa, which carries a lot of weight in Halacha. But it carries a lot of weight in Halacha, overrides all kinds of things, takes precedence to a lot of things, and you don't find this concept stressed by the Yom Tovim D'Oraisa. And it's interesting, what's talk of the understanding? So here we have to understand, and this is the fundamental point, which is, we're going to discuss how it applies to Chanukah and Purim, and then we'll get to the unique element of Purim. But the truth is, that what's unique about these Yom Tovim that are bringing out Pirsumei Nisa, both Chanukah and Purim, is that neither of them are celebrating an event of the past. Rather, they are both celebrating an ongoing miracle. Meaning as follows. The Chavis HaVavis says that if you want, sometimes people ask, if I would see a miracle of the magnitude of the things that happened back in Mitzrayim, you'd see a splitting of the sea, I'd be a different person, I'd be inspired. Okay, that we already know is not necessarily so. People can see miracles and get right back to business a couple of weeks later, or even less than that. But L'maisa, the Chovas HaVavos says, you can see miracles of equal magnitude in our times as well. Just the difference is that the Kriyas Yamsuf was handed to you on a silver platter. It's a miracle that was stuffed down your throat and hit you like a ton of bricks. These are miracles that you have to bother to take note of. The way he puts it is, be'ein sichlon. You have to use your mind's eye, because they could be in front of you, but you can go your whole life oblivious to them. What does he mean? So he says, if you think about it a little bit, you are not shocked by the fact that there are Jews today, because you were born as a Jew, you were born with Jews all around you, you grew up with Jews all around you, so there's nothing shocking about it. And he says, if you think of it in terms of broad picture of 2,000 years of our history, looking at it from the perspective of different points in history in retrospect, and today to see a flourishing Jewish nation is shocking.
Why isn't that by other religions as well?
What's that?
You say the same thing by other religions, that they're miracles, that the Christians are around 2,000 years ago.
No one tasted.
Well, they are. Well, the big difference is, there were wars. There were wars.
There were wars.
But, first of all, the Muslims, the Khal is not a kasha. They were the ones just making the wars. The Christians were victimized to an extent. But there were wars. But at the same time, did you ever have a situation where there was a nation that was so consistently, for so long, persecuted and pursued by the strongest nations in the world, trying to eliminate them, one after the other, who made it such an agenda? Yes, the early Christians, they tried.
When the Christians came to Israel, it wasn't against the Jews per se.
What's that?
When the Christians came to Israel,
it was against the Muslims too.
True.
That's true. At the same time, who were they fighting? They were fighting. It was two good Gesunta armies fighting each other. Right, that was going on. And what's his name again?
We were weakness throughout the whole history.
That's exactly it.
That's a good thing.
We were weaklings throughout history, and that brings out the miraculousness of our survival. That's the point. Yes, we're talking about the Christians and the Muslims. They had their armies, they fought each other fine. Once the wars were over, there were a couple of rounds of the Crusades, and then they just said, Shane, Richard the Lionhearted got a rabbit heart and went back to England, and then basically, okay, Beseda. Yes, they had their periods, but a nation that was so consistently persecuted, and in such a broad way, and by such mighty nations, one after the other, there is no such other phenomenon. There's no such other phenomenon. I could just say that you'd have to go so far back in history. My grandmother, everybody, I'm sure everybody here has relatives who have been in the camps in one way or the other. My grandmother, to imagine seeing, you know, back in 1943, when it was right in the midst of, she was an alumnus of Auschwitz, the picture, you know, seeing, you know, 80 grandchildren thriving in Eretz Yisrael, not realistic. Now this is true on two planes, and here's where we come to the difference between Hanukkah and Purim. This is true on the spiritual level, and this is true on the physical level. Meaning that the spiritual level, there have been plenty of points in history where anybody with a head on his shoulders saw that old authentic Judaism is a matter of time before it's going to flicker out. That was clear to any rational person back in the times of the Yevanim. Was clear to any rational person. What's his name said it? Geiger said it back in Germany, when the spiritual Holocaust, which preceded the physical Holocaust, right? But the spiritual Holocaust started in Germany about a century before the physical Holocaust. But then Geiger also said, when Geiger read Rabbi Hirsch's first work, so, by the way, it's interesting that Rav Hirsch and Geiger were chavrusas. They learned Zvachim together in the University of Bonn. They were together in the university. Afterwards, they turned into, you know, arch enemies. But when Geiger read Rabbi Hirsch's first work, he praised it, because at that point he didn't feel that it was a threat. He praised it, and he said he was astounded by the work, but he's fighting a dying cause. Meaning, he's fighting a dying cause. Right? Anybody rational could see that. And today, where our Geiger's spiritual heirs are basically, whatever's left of them are rapidly assimilating, and where's Rabbi Hirsch's community? So that's the Nes Chanukah, is celebrating not the fact of what happened then, but Hashem was showing then how even in times of galus, which the second Beis HaMikdash was considered to an extent, even in times of galus, Hashem is guaranteeing that as long as the Jews hold on, the Jewish faith and religion will always weather everything that comes to threaten them. And therefore, Hanukkah is not celebrating back then, but it's celebrating the Jewish faith prevailing over communism, and the Jewish faith prevailing over reform, and the Jewish faith prevailing over etc., etc., etc. Purim is celebrating on the physical level. With Purim, we're celebrating how Hashem is showing us, yes, it's times of galus, it was outside Eretz Yisrael. It's like the way the Grah puts it. The way the Grah puts it is, he says, Pesach! Sorry, not Pesach, not a good example. But he says, miracles happen in Eretz Yisrael, that's not a miracle. Miracles are natural in Eretz Yisrael. But that a miracle happens in Chutz La'aretz, in the galus, that's a miracle. That's the way he puts it. So, he says, that happens in Chutz La'aretz, in the galus, here Hashem was showing a special level of Pibah. He's showing, even when it looks like I'm not there, even when it looks like I'm not there, I am there, behind the scenes, but just as there. And in fact, the Gra says that when Hashem is doing miracles behind the scenes, sometimes those miracles are going to happen on a much bigger magnitude than the miracles, the open miracles. Listen, for example, the splitting of the sea, what did it involve? The sea was one of the most spectacular miracles ever, right? But it was limited to that spot. The sea was split. What was involved in the Nes of Purim? The Gra says something amazing. Well, I'm just going to have to stop in mid-sentence. We'll continue next week in mid-session. He says, you know, that the capital of the Persian Empire was originally not Shushan. It was originally the city of Babylon, the city of Babel. It was the country of Babel. And Babel, like we say New York, New York, that Babel was, the city of Babel was the capital. Now, there was a Jew living in Shushan named Mordechai. Hashem wanted a miracle to happen around that Jew. So what happened? He put a bug in Tachashverosh's head that he had to have the biggest throne in the world constructed. It was constructed in Shushan. By the time they finished, they saw they couldn't transport it. So what happened? The huge, the mighty Persian Empire moved its capital, this is mind-boggling, from Babylon, from the old city of Babel, over to Shushan, so that the whole capital should be there, and therefore the whole story of the Megillah can play out as it played out. This is what happens when Hashem is doing a concealedness. Hashem manipulates world events in such a broader way behind the scenes. If you were living then, okay, so the United States decided to move its capital from Washington to Colorado. You're going to go connect that?
Persia conquered Babel. It's a different country.
Wait.
When Russia conquers America, they don't make their capital.
No, but the capital, the Persian kings were in Babylon up until that point. Achashverosh was the first.
They conquered them.
So they settled their capital. But they settled their capital. They established the capital in the city of Babel. They took over. Look at the first Gra. Yeah, but that's where the capital was. That was where the Persian Empire sprouted at the time when they conquered Babel. Before it wasn't so big.
It did,
but it wasn't such a big empire. It became the world power at that point. As a world power, its capital was in Babylon. Look at the first Gra and the Megillah, the second Gra and the Megillah. So, what we're celebrating here is the realization that even when things are happening behind the curtain, till today, Hashem is busy manipulating things and orchestrating things. Just we have to open our eyes to see it. This is the big impact, the big lesson that we're supposed to focus on in the Megillah. Okay, like I said, mid-sentence, and we're already late, but we'll continue developing this idea, Blina, there next week.